Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State, providing access to the most advanced cancer treatments available from a team specialized in treating just one type of cancer, yours. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/choosethejames.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Almost everyone enjoys seeing public art, but the process of getting public art projects approved is lengthy and complicated. The Greater Columbus Arts Council launched a new public art strategy last month. It's a comprehensive plan which includes resources, statistics, and recommendations for the development of public art in the city. Jamie Goldstein is the Chief Creative Officer of the Greater Columbus Arts Council and the staff lead for the strategy, and she joins us today. Welcome back to All Sides, Jamie.
Thanks, Amy. Great to be here.
So let's start with the basics. Does a city really need a public art plan? Like, why did you decide to go down this road? Does a city need to plan out public art?
Yeah, it's a roadmap, right? And public art is complicated, and it's different in every city. Approval processes and where different entities within the city intersect with the process. And just trying to demystify this process for artists, for communities, for developers. We, GCAC, knew for a long time that we were the last of the 14 largest cities in the country without a comprehensive public art strategy. Hmm. And we have an urban tree canopy plan. The city of Columbus has so many plans, right? I think when you're strategic about it, when you have a blueprint to work from, you can be more successful across everything. You can get more people engaged, and you can really help. One of the goals is to empower Columbus artists to be better if they want to get into public art, if they want to strengthen their public art making practices, tools and resources for them, and hopefully in not too distant future, some education programs that so they can do better here and they can do better in other cities as well.
So you worked with a national organization to develop what you're calling the Greater Columbus Public Arts Strategy, and it resulted in a big document, and it is a big document. It is more than 280 pages long, so I will say, when I say big document, I mean it. We can go through parts of it over the course of our discussion, but can you give me an overall summary? I know it's hard to summarize 280 pages, but what's your top line summary?
Top line summary is that it is a blueprint for us to do successful public art projects in the future, no matter who you are, whether you are an artist or you're a municipality or a developer or a community group of neighbors. We want to provide you the tools and resources to get that done. That means a step-by-step process. That means also being a helpmate, right? That GCAC is really, we are there to help you navigate the process, as well as provide you the resources that will really make sure that your project is a success and that your relationships with artists are a success as well.
You worked with a group called Lord Cultural Resources. They're consultants. They work with museums and art galleries on long-term planning and projects. What did they tell you whenever you decided to start working with them? What did they tell you about Columbus versus other areas of the United States that they've worked in?
So they do a lot of cultural planning for communities as well. And Lord has just been amazing to work with. Their staff is incredible. They've been with us every step of the way. The first thing that we did was we commissioned an environmental scan. So the environmental scan looked at Columbus against 23 other communities, and then we did a deeper dive into 10 other communities. 91% of those had a public art strategy. Mm-hmm. We're behind a little bit in this. We knew we needed to get this done so that we have this framework moving forward. Looking at those 10 cities, we have some basic stats on how many of them have percent for art programs. Across the country, 46% of communities have percent for art programs in some fashion.
When you say percent for art, you're talking about money.
I am. Yeah. And so just briefly, a percent for, there are many different ways to fund public art. Mm-hmm. The most successful programs have some sort of public fund contribution.
Okay.
And percent for art programs generally come from capital budgets. So operating budgets in cities are people and programs, and capital budgets are bricks and mortar and infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And it is about taking a portion of whatever was delegated to a particular development and shifting it so that the community benefits from art as part of that effort. Mm-hmm. So it's not about more money. It's not about new money. It's about sort of shifting our focus so that we can build this greater public art environment together. So
you found through your research that a percent, a dedicated percent toward art is something other places do.
Yes, it is
raised your hand and said, "Me."
it is the most commonly used funding mechanism for public art across the country. Mm-hmm. And when you say a percent, it doesn't necessarily mean a percent. Some cities it's 2%. Some cities it's 0.5%. And it's not generally from an entire capital budget. It's mm-hmm. from a specific portion of the capital budget. So that can, you know, that can mean anywhere from $5 to $10 million for some communities. The importance of the dedicated funding stream, no matter where it comes from, is that it allows you to plan. Mm-hmm. Many larger public art projects take more than 1 year, and it's a substantial investment. For example, the Bean, Cloudgate in Chicago, affectionately known as the Bean, took almost 6 years to bring to fruition, 2 years to construct. It started with a budget of $2 million, of $6 million, and I think ended with a budget of $23 million. Now, we don't like to see that kind of budget explosion happen, right? But that's also the important part about planning. But when you're really going for something iconic, those are the kinds of numbers that we're talking about, right? So having a dedicated funding stream that is substantial and allows you to invest in iconic projects like that over the long term, but also focus on equity, which is another part of our plan. We are looking at a public-private partnership model through going forward, and the way that we hope that we can fund this. And we hope that we can provide that equity. We have a lot of neighborhoods without any public art. 87% of people want public art, want to see public art. Only 56% get to see it on a daily basis. And so we want to close that gap. Looking at opportunity neighborhoods and other civic efforts, how can we align? How can we really make a success of not just public art, but other initiatives that are happening within Columbus?
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about GCAC's new public art strategy with Jamie Goldstein, Chief Creative Officer at the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Now, it's no secret that funding for arts and culture programs has been cut at the federal level. That has trickled down to the local level. GCAC recently lost $4 million in funding from Franklin County. Are you able to implement your public art plan after that loss?
You know, we're not going to be able to move as fast or as far as we wanted right out of the gate, but we will keep the momentum going forward. I think it's really critical. That money from the county, you know, our commissioners are having to make some really hard choices right now. Things are chaotic on the funding front in so many ways. That money is earmarked specifically for programs and people. So those dollars go to and not for public art. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to note that some of the dollars that we receive through the ticket fee, we have invested in public art through the mural program that we launched in 2023. We have 50 new murals that have been created in just the past 2 years around Columbus. And so we will keep investing in a modest way. We will build the framework within GCAC to have this program. And we're just going to keep it moving forward. We'll go step by step.
So this line item, though, from Franklin County, if you had a percent for art program with Franklin County, you would still get some money, like even if there were cuts, right? Because there would be it would be a percent of what was allocated, right?
We want. Part of this effort, too, is to continue to push the conversation about art as essential, as essential as any other services and what we provide to communities. Green space is more and more seen as essential when you talk about development, particularly. And we want public art to be part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So how much money do you, you're not a budget director, so I don't mean to put you on the spot, but Franklin County, you lost $4 million, but do you get money from the city or the city money is through that tax instead?
We do. We have three primary funding sources, and all three of them are really critical in what makes GCAC both resilient and our strength in the community. The first and the one that we've had the longest is the hotel motel bed tax. Mm-hmm. We get a portion of that along with Experience Columbus and Health and Human Services and the Convention Center. And, you know, our organizations contribute to bringing people in and putting butts in beds, as they say. and we invest that back into the community. That is the most stable funding source. It's been in place the longest. It is fairly recession proof. I don't want to knock on wood right now, but it is. But it stays the most predictable from year to year. The ticket fee is the second. Both of these are use fees, right? Not only you only pay it if you buy a ticket. You only pay it if you stay in a hotel room.
Yeah.
So they don't come from the city's capital or operating budget. Those dollars have been game changing for GCAC, but they're extremely volatile. We're having a very hard time predicting from month to month or from year to year what the proceeds from the ticket fee are going to be.
How many people are going to go to an event or how many events there are.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. And we don't have any models, and we really only have a few years of good things because it went into effect in 2019. Then we had the pandemic and then things came back in 2022. So we only have a few years of this, and we are seeing a softening of the ticket fee this year. People are concerned about their leisure dollars. It's pretty clear. And so that's the second. And then the county funds, again, also very stable. So those three funding sources help make up what GCAC does in the community, primarily grants to organizations of all sizes, large, medium, and small, and our funding to artists. And we're one of the top organizations in the country, local arts councils in the country, for supporting artists. And we've really become a national model, too, because of these diverse set of funding sources that we've been able to secure.
You mentioned your mural projects. Apparently mural is a hard word for me to say right now. And you have 50 new murals that have gone up around the city in the past couple of years. You had big plans for this. Did the funding cuts impact that? Is the mural project still going forward the way you had planned?
We are still working through what our grant programs are going to be in 2026. We funded 80 murals since that started, so there's going to be more murals coming up. Things are going to be tight next year. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We're going to find a way to continue to invest in public art on a small scale. And I don't know what that's going to look like quite yet. We have a draft of an implementation guide for the program within GCAC, an Art in Greater Columbus Art in Public Places program. And when our new CEO, Mitch Menchaca, gets here, he is coming from Phoenix. They have a long time, strong percent for art program within that city. A top priority is to work with him on this implementation guide that we have to figure out internally what the structure and support looks like for public art within GCAC. And then, of course, out to the community.
When people think of public art, I think mostly they think of probably statues and murals, right? Do you have other things in mind in your public art plan, or are those the main things?
I'm so glad you asked. Actually, yes. public art is so many things.
Yeah.
And we have a typology in here that really helps people envision what that looks like. So it can be incorporated into infrastructure and architecture, like the Long Street Cultural Wall. It can be obviously the two things you mentioned, sculptures and murals, which are the first things that come to mind. It can also be simple stuff where you license work by artists. We're seeing more and more utility box wraps. We have the restroom wraps downtown. While that's not original art, it does allow locally based artists to showcase their work in some way. And so that's really exciting. Digital is a new is a big new thing. You're seeing that in larger cities all over the place. Commissioned digital work that plays on big screens, whether it's through an outdoor vendor such as Lamar or Orange Barrel or in other ways like projection mapping. And we're seeing a little bit more of that here. Blink, public art is an economic driver, right? When you look at Blink, it brings in millions of dollars to Cincinnati every 2 years when they do it. The Grand Rapids Art Prize, which was a multi-disciplinary public art showcase. So it was sculptures and installation artists, et cetera. Also was a huge economic driver for Grand Rapids, Michigan. And so we see this as a really positive thing for tourism. And then we grow our presence in the public art sort of pantheon nationally. And people really start to see that an important part of Columbus's image, right? And what you can enjoy when you come here. So it's definitely a tourism draw as well.
So related to that tourism draw, in the plan somewhere? I mean, I didn't read 280 pages, I'm going to admit. So somewhere in the plan, do you have Columbus's version of the bean or the St. Louis Arch or something like that?
This plan, that is one place that this strategy does not go. we throw out lots of ideas to get people thinking, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's what's important, because successful public art means that you engage with the community and the artists along the process, right? Mm-hmm. The number one first thing is identify the location. Public art is like real estate. Location, location, location first, because that's when you're really going to be able to get your hands around who are the neighbors, who are the business owners, are there artists who live in that neighborhood who want to be engaged? How can you build a process that is really community-based, getting people excited about bringing that vibrancy and that sense of place and that sense of belonging to their neighborhood.
Coming up, Jamie from GCAC is staying with us, and we're going to be joined by the head of operations for the Wexner Center for the Arts, who will join us to talk about the way art and public art are funded by the state. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Public art can take many forms, from statues to murals to fountains. The Greater Columbus Arts Council recently launched a new public art strategy. And one key takeaway from the citywide surveys is that residents value public art more than many might expect. We're discussing Columbus's new strategy with hopes to create a more robust public art scene in the city and in Franklin County. Joining us now is Megan Cavanaugh, Ohio State's Campus Art Collection Manager. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And also still with us is Jamie Goldstein, Chief Creative Officer at the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Thanks for being here, Jamie.
Thanks, Amy.
So, Megan, can you tell us about your work with Ohio State when it comes to public art? What public art do we see on campus?
Well, the vast majority of the public art that you'll find across campus comes from Ohio's Percent for Art program. I know Jamie already talked a little bit about what a Percent for Art program is. And here in the state of Ohio, we had a program created by the state legislature back in 1990. So we've hit 35 years. It's funded projects all across the state. And the way it works here is anytime a building project, whether it's a large renovation or a new building, if it gets at least $4 million in state funding, 1% of that budget goes to support a public art piece in association with the building. So, as Jamie mentioned, it's not additional money. It's just a part of the money that's set aside to make sure that there's an artwork involved.
And am I understanding the Percent for Art state program, is that through the Ohio Arts Council? Do they run it? Or
yes. So the Ohio Arts Council administers it and does the contract work and the legwork and stuff to help support that program.
Okay. So you're saying it's for like big projects. So if the project that's happening is more than $4 million, then art is considered, right?
Correct.
So obviously I'm thinking of the new giant hospital that we're building. Was there a percent for that related to art then?
So it didn't receive any state funding.
Oh.
So
there's the catch.
Yes,
okay.
It has to get at least $4 million in state funding.
Okay.
And as part of a capital budget and appropriation.
Okay. So, Jamie, if the state has this Percent for Art program, does Columbus ever get anything from that? Does GCAC, if a project has state funding, I guess?
If a project has state funding, then the Ohio Arts Council would administer that program. So Columbus sees things on campus, on the Ohio State Fairgrounds. There are Percent for Art projects that have happened in our area. So as Megan said, it is statewide and it's funded some amazing sculptures, and it's for the purchase or commission of work. And so on the lower side, you might see artwork being purchased to line public areas in a hallway. in a building, for example. But it also often means an outdoor sculptural piece or a mosaic. And there's lots of different. Garden of Constance is a public art project on campus. So there's lots of different ways it can manifest. But if it comes from the state, it would be administered by the Ohio Arts Council.
Okay, so tell me about some public art projects that Ohio State has done. Just give me an example, your favorite, we can start with.
Gosh, there's quite a few. Jamie mentioned the Garden of Constance. Mm-hmm. Typically, people know that as the numbers. Those are the large sculptures over by the mathematics
and science
buildings.
I didn't know what that was, but I know the numbers.
Yes,
all right,
yeah. Yes. Many of them have their own nicknames. There's actually a beautiful Roy Lichtenstein sculpture over near the 18th Avenue Library, and I've learn now that people have all sorts of names for it. Some people call it the Wi-Fi guy because they think it looks a little bit like the Wi-Fi sign. But that was a really important work that was partially funded by Percent for Art and actually also as a gift from the Lichtenstein Foundation. But those are some of the big ones. There's a really beautiful Saul LeWitt wall drawing in Pomerine Hall that was recently finished. We have three works in progress right now. Mm-hmm. So those will be some of my favorites when they're done, just because I'll have gotten to work on them more closely.
I love the fact that public art gets nicknames, and this happens all over the place. I referenced Cloudgate earlier in Chicago. Most people
Cloudgate's the real name.
Cloudgate is the real name, okay. And it is affectionately known as the Bean, that big reflective bean-shaped thing in Grant Park. But you know, our Scioto Lounge series downtown, people affectionately know as the Deer. And so sometimes they're creative, but I think that it indicates that public art finds a special place in people's heart.
Tell me about one of the projects that you're working on right now. So you said three are in the works. Are they top secret, or can you tell me about them?
Well, I can definitely tell you about one because it's about to arrive here tomorrow.
Oh.
So we are literally in the midst of installing it. We've been working with an artist named Athena Latoka. She has been commissioned to create a painting that will go inside the atrium of Postal Hall, which is the School of Dentistry here on campus. Mm-hmm. This is one where it is an indoor artwork. Mm-hmm. So our legislation doesn't require it to be outdoors. Mm-hmm. It does require it to be in a public space. So the atrium is this large, beautiful space that has walls just crying out for some sort of artwork to be placed on them. And at Ohio State, ours are about half outside and half inside for these Percent for Art commissions. But Athena's been working on this project for years, since long before my position was even created. We had some delays from the pandemic and that sort of thing, but she's created a beautiful artwork that involves her research into the prehistoric peoples of the area. She's come and visited several times and gone to the mounds and visited the UNESCO heritage sites to learn more just about this area and what pre-existed us. And she's tried to bring that into this artwork. And she's even incorporating some prehistoric soil samples into it that we were able to get for her here at the university.
And so having this Percent for Art and being able to dedicate, like saying you're going to put art in this building, that means that not only can you pay for the supplies and the space, but then you pay the artist, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And actually the way it works here in Ohio, the money goes entirely to the artist. So they create the budget. They determine what their fees are, what the materials are. They have to pay for the installation and the shipping. Rather than if you worked at a museum, it would work a little bit differently for a commission like this. Mm-hmm. But yes, they do pay themselves. And that's really important because I think a lot of times their time and their creativity gets a little undervalued in this process. And this way they can make sure that they are being adequately compensated for their time and their thoughts.
And Jamie, that's an important part of your public art strategy, is to making sure that artists are getting paid.
100%. I mean, artists are an economic driver. Creatives are an economic driver in our community. And so one of the tools that we have in the strategy is really focused on giving artists the pieces of information they need to put together successful applications, to respond well to requests for qualifications and proposals, to know the right questions to ask when they're getting ready to enter into a contract, and all of the considerations. What are their rights as it relates to the images? What is a fair wage for the project? And so this is the kind of information resources that we're rolling out right out of the gate to, we hope, be immediately helpful for artists to both protect themselves and be more successful in the community.
And let's talk about something that Megan mentioned about this public art being indoors or outdoors. For your public art strategy for GCAC, Are you thinking all outdoors, or is it public if it's in a lobby?
We do. So in 2019, part of what got us started down this road was in 2019, we launched the public art database as part of ColumbusMakesArt.com. So if you go to ColumbusMakesArt.com and click on public art at the top, you can find public art across our city. You can filter by, I just want to see murals or I just want to see sculptures. But we do have indoor collections in public spaces. Our Columbus Metropolitan Library System has an amazing collection of art. Mm-hmm. Those are public art pieces. Some of them are outdoor, but the majority of them are indoor. So if it is a public space, there's no money required to enter, no expectation on the part of the business, to like a restaurant. The State House also has an amazing collection. Part of that is indoor and part of that is outdoor. So we do list those kinds of things. I mean, I think it really, again, it comes down to the location and the specific neighborhood that it's going to be installed in. What works best for that site and for those community members.
So, Megan, the building you're talking about, you said it was the dentistry building. Mm-hmm. Is the lobby open? Like, can I open the door and just go in anytime?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's open to the public and it does have a cafe right there. So people are coming and going to the cafe, even if they may not be part of the dentistry school. And there is a public clinic there. So there are people coming and going to get their dental work done.
Yeah.
That's part of what the school does as well.
Okay. So, Jamie, you mean if it's a place like the library that's open and you can go into. So, because I'm thinking of like the big head thing in the convention center. Mm-hmm. That's public art, right?
Absolutely.
Even if the convention center happens to be locked sometimes, you know, or that particular door, it's right. Still public, right?
That is correct. And, you know, what we ask is that when they post those pieces into the database, they include the hours.
Yeah.
Because obviously libraries aren't open 24/7. Mm-hmm. The dentistry buildings probably not open 24/7, but the majority of time people can access this for free and see that public art, whether it's indoor or outdoor. By the way, the Big Head, its official title is As We Are. So
it's the Big Head.
It is the big head. I should have brought that one up. It's that one has
the added benefit too. You can see it from the outside.
Yes.
So we have a work on campus that is very visible from outside and inside. It's in a lobby that's glassed in, and so that one actually is a light piece that you can see from all over.
Which one is that?
It is a Leo Villarreal piece over in the Seebeck building.
What do people call it then, if it's not?
You know, they call it all sorts of things. I don't think it has any one nickname. The lights, the moving lights, the light wall. Hmm.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about GCAC's new public art strategy with Ohio State's Campus Art Collection Manager, Megan Cavanaugh, and Jamie Goldstein, Chief Creative Officer for the Greater Columbus Arts Council. So, Megan, tell me your thoughts as someone who cares about art, who manages an art collection at a big university. When you heard that GCAC was going down this road to create a public art strategy and actually make a plan, what did you think?
Oh, I was so excited. Mm-hmm. I think it's long overdue. I know they've spent a massive amount of time on it, but you know, Columbus is a city that's been growing and changing over the past few decades, and you know, I don't think we even knew we needed it until, you know, we were already a little bit behind. But I think it's wonderful. I think, you know, this is a city that's known for being creative, for having creative people live here. So it only makes sense that we would have some sort of strategy to help, you know, make a foundation for that work.
So for future projects at Ohio State, do you think that you'll use this plan or consult this plan or consult with GCAC, or does Ohio State kind of just have to use the Ohio Arts Council money and do its own thing?
I mean, for now, that is where our funding comes from, is for the Percent for Art projects. Eventually, we would love to have a public art plan specific to the university. We're not there yet, but we do. That is in our long-term planning. But we will definitely work with GCAC and the public arts plan as much as we can to make sure that we are aligning with what they're doing. But we don't have the same funding. We won't get, you know, city funding or that sort of thing for ours. So it won't quite fit within their plan, but we definitely want to be as aligned with it as possible.
But I know that University District neighborhood folks are very interested in this. And so, you know, public art projects happen both on public property and on private property. I think that's really important to note. And that's part of why I think it's important for GCAC to be in this space and helpful, because depending on where your project is, you might need all sorts of different intersections with the city specifically. If it's on public property, it has to be approved by the Columbus Homes Art Commission. If it's in Rec and Parks, it needs to be approved by, if it's in a park, it needs to be approved by Rec and Parks and the Columbus Art Commission. If it's in a historic resource area, it needs to go in front of the commission. And that's whether it's on public property or private property. So there's all these different scenarios. Mm. It took us a long time to sort of sort through them and get like a good logic flow. And that's one of the next things that's going up on the website, because we want to help people navigate the various scenarios for public art projects within the community.
Megan, tell me about how something like the Numbers statue is. Wait, is that the real name, or that's not what it's...
The real name is Garden of Constance.
Okay, the I'm going to call it the Numbers.
Go for it.
Tell me how something like the Numbers statue would come about. Did someone had an idea? Why numbers? Why where they're placed? Like, take me back in time with that project, because it's very visible. Mm-hmm. If you walk through Ohio State, you can't miss it.
Right. Well, the project would have started by understanding that the building project was getting at least $4 million in state funding, and okay. that it was going to qualify for Percent for Art. And then once we would have had an amount determined, there have been committees in place that would seek out artists. The way we're doing it now is we ask several artists who might be interested for their ideas. There have been different ways all through time, but in that particular moment of time, mm-hmm. they were having artists submit proposals. And so Barbara probably would have looked around, seen what the context was, known that it was for a math area. I know she worked really closely with the professors in the area and asked them to submit some ideas. And there's actually Constance written in the tiles of the pavers of the mm-hmm. area. So she worked with them. Once her proposal was approved, then it was an iterative process where she worked with the people on campus and made it what it is. And then there's a long process of fabrication and installation. Mm-hmm. You know, for her, there's metals, there's ceramics, there's tile. There were a lot of different components that she would have had to all bring together and then bring it here to install it. And then there's a ton of people here on campus that then are involved in that part of the program of, you know, the building people and facilities operations and development and the groundskeeping, and just everyone tends to have to play a part in getting it actually implemented.
Yeah, earlier we talked with Jamie about how when most people think of public art, they probably think murals, statues, and fountains, right? Are you thinking of any other forms of public art? Jamie mentioned some more digital as being maybe a future way of showcasing public art. What do you look toward in the future?
And lighting, you already have.
Oh, and the lighting.
Right?
Yeah.
The James Turrell at the Franklin Park Conservatory is another example of lighting installation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have quite a range here on campus already, and we certainly would like to diversify that even more through different types of media. We do have the light work that we've already talked about, which is a Leo Villarreal piece. It's made of hundreds of LED lights on a very large wall. We have several floor pieces that's maybe not something people would think about. We have a beautiful Anne Hamilton work called Verse in Thompson mm-hmm. Library that she created there. There's another work at the Schott. People probably walk over it and don't even notice it, but the entire first floor of the Schottenstein Center has an amazing Alexis Smith mosaic in the terrazzo.
It does, doesn't it?
It does. Yes,
that is public art.
Yes, it's public art, and it's a really...
Look down next time.
Yeah, really amazing work. So look at your feet the next time. But yes, certainly, you know, I know you were talking earlier about these light installations. You know, when I used to work at the Wexner Center for the Arts, we worked with Orange Barrel Media to create digital works on their Ike monitors mm-hmm. and on some of their billboards across town. I think that's a really interesting new media that artists are becoming more and more interested in, how they can do that. So... Yes.
We have great media support, Orange Barrel and Lamar, for public art projects. And we also have really great support from private developers here in town, from Pizzuti to Kaufman and to Jeff Edwards, particularly, who funded Current that hangs over Gay and High. Mm-hmm. I think we have the ecosystem pieces in place to have really successful efforts in the future.
Tell me. Let's use the Anne Hamilton piece as an example. Did Anne Hamilton know what she wanted to make, or was that also a process where, I'm guessing what comes first, Anne Hamilton, like the chicken or the egg? And like, you know, for the piece, did you know you wanted something in Thompson Hall, like, and just say go? Yeah.
I wasn't involved in the selection of that work, but I know Anne does an incredible amount of research whenever mm-hmm. she has an amazing art project. I adore her work and her, but I know she does a tremendous amount of research. So my guess is that she knew She was selected and knew it would be in the library and then worked on all the details of it. Her work is a concordance, which is a very literary device, looking at really important texts. So it makes a lot of sense to me that her work in the library is based on books. So I don't know exactly which came first, if it was the library and then Anne or Anne or in the library, but there was an incredible amount of research either way.
Does it go both ways for GCAC, Jamie, where sometimes you have an artist where you know you just want to work with that person, or is it the piece and the space first?
Not as of yet. And again, best practice in public art is identify the location. And then you can move forward in a number of different ways. You can issue an RFQ, request for qualifications, where artists submit their interest. You can then narrow that down to a set of finalists who you request and pay for proposals from, right? So they're then specific to that site. And then you do a jury process to select the artist. And then the artist really gets to work. So they've done their initial research, and then but then they come and they see the site. They get to know it. You know, there are obviously gifts and donations that hop into public art programs across the country. If someone wants to donate a major sculptural piece, and all of those policies are different across the across communities. So that's when you would have a piece by an artist, and then you'd have to find a location. But really, best practice is identify the location and then figure out how you want to identify the artist through whatever process that I just described, and then find your artist and start working with them. Having artists' voices centered within the conversation is critical.
We have been talking with Megan Cavanaugh, Ohio State's Campus Art Collection Manager. Megan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And coming up, Jamie is from GCAC is going to stay with us, and we're going to be talking with the Dublin Arts Council about how artists themselves can fit into the public art plan. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Columbus is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. And up until recently, we were one of the largest U.S. cities without a public art plan. That has changed. The Greater Columbus Arts Council recently released a new public art strategy with hopes of bringing more public art to all of Columbus's neighborhoods. We've talked about the funding process and community perspectives on public art, but what is the process like for artists getting the public art approved? It can be complex and a lengthy process, and to make the process easier is one of the goals of GCAC. Still with us, we have Jamie Goldstein, Chief Creative Officer for the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Thanks for being here, Jamie.
Thanks, Amy.
And joining us now, we have Marijn van der Heijden, Executive Director of the Dublin Arts Council. She is also a longtime curator and arts administrator and can help us understand the challenges artists might face. Welcome to All Sides.
Thanks so much, Amy.
Okay, so Marijn, from your experience working with artists and institutions, what are some of the issues that artists might face whenever it comes to the idea of like doing a public art project? Are there a lot of hurdles to get an idea from an idea to reality?
Yeah, it's kind of the big question, isn't it? And I think there are so many hurdles. Public art is such a very distinct area. Because it involves so many aspects of creating. It's obviously creating the work, but there's infrastructure pieces as well, working typically with local governments and public works and so on and so forth. There are so many layers. So it can be quite complex for an artist. And I've, you know, one of the things that I've seen is that for artists to get into public art, it probably makes sense to have aspects or work opportunities, I should say, available for smaller commissions, ways where artists can, you know, get started, get their feet wet, do something to learn a little bit more about the complexity without getting into a multi-thousand or million-dollar project.
Yeah. So true.
Yeah. Well, and Jamie mentioned that the best practice in public art is location first and then getting proposals. So say Jamie picks a location and says, we want to put a public art piece here, place X, and we were call for artists to make a submission. Do you feel like some artists would know exactly what to do and other artists are like, I have no idea how to even begin there?
I think, you know, artists develop strategies for themselves for how they might want to approach that. But I would say typically it involves quite a bit of research, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of public art, if not all public art, is site specific. Mm-hmm. The site is really critical, I think, for an artist too, to understand not just the local population, the location, the history, the people. There's so much to it. So I would say research is really key. If an artist knew exactly what they were going to do before they had even seen the sites, you know, I'm not sure how valuable that would be for the community. So ideally, we're looking for artists, and I think this is certainly a strategy of most, if not all, artists that I've met. We're looking for artists to embed themselves, to try to understand the history and learn as much as they can about that specific location and the people, so that, you know, in the end, you walk away with an artwork that is truly capable of connecting.
Both Leatherlips and Watch House, I think, out in Dublin are, and Field of Corn, perfect examples of artists doing that exact thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Field of Corn. We've been discussing over the hour that that things are not always their real name. Is Field of Corn the real name for it?
It's close. Field of Corn with Osage orange trees.
Okay. Yeah. So we just shortened the title. Is Leatherlips the real name for
that's
that?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe in Dublin, they're not changing the names as much.
But some people out there, we learned, call it our corn.
That's right.
That's right. That, okay. Again, people just really like embracing, you know, public art, and it's part of their identity.
So true.
Jamie, part of your plan is to try to make things easier for the artists, to help them understand what they need to do and why and how. Tell me a little bit about that in being the artist being involved in the strategy document.
So really, when we first we did the environmental scan, as I mentioned, but then we spent 6 months doing public engagement. And in that 6 months period, we really centered Columbus artists, Central Ohio artists' voices in that, to learn what they needed, what they wanted to see. They wanted more tools. They wanted more resources. They want education opportunities. They want more commissions, mm-hmm. and more commission opportunities, and better skills at applying for those both here and in other places. So that's what that our, you know, our one of our number one goals is to strengthen our Columbus artists opportunity, our Central Ohio artists opportunities. And that means, mm-hmm. not just here, but again, in other places. Our public art is always going to be a mix of locally based artists and national and international calls. I mean, I think every community needs that mix, because we also want our artists to get commissions in other places. They make good ambassadors for Columbus, and they raise their profile. And so if we can really give our artists the skills and tools to do that, we're in conversations with CCAD potentially to start a program. I'm working on some K-12 lesson plan education stuff where, mm-hmm. public art can be used to teach other subjects. Like, what are the angles for a geometry lesson? What are the angles of the art sculpture at CCAD, mm-hmm. right? So really integrating public art into the community in a big way, and also finding a way to help artists play. Justin Withrow with Lookout Supply has a big wall, and artists can come in and paint on it in large scale. So how do you, if you're a painter, how do you take your work from, you know, a 2 by 3 foot piece to a 20 by 30 foot piece, right? Mm-hmm. And how does your work magnify, and what are the logistics that you have to understand, whether it's just paint and the kind of paint and sealing. And, like, again, I think Marianne hinted at that. There's so many pieces to it when you are talking about installing a piece, particularly outside. Yeah. And it's going to be, you know, open to the weather.
Marianne, you are with the Dublin Arts Council, and I did find your name in this big giant document. So whenever you found out that GCAC was making this public art strategy, like, what did you think? Why did you want to be involved?
It was super, super exciting to me. And I also serve on the Columbus Art Commission. So, mm-hmm. I had some idea that this was in the works and, mm-hmm. and happening, and obviously very supportive of that too, because I think without a strategy, or, you know, you can still do great work, but a strategy is really key to get so many people on board, you know, so that you can work towards the same goal together. You know, I think in this climate too, as much as we can pool our resources and our funding and our, you know, our networks and so on and so forth, it's really, collaboration is so critical.
Tell me about the Columbus Arts Commission versus GCAC. What is the Columbus Arts Commission?
So it's a mayor of Columbus appointed body that will review, that reviews public arts proposals that are on city property. So the city right away, anything that is on Columbus City property will be reviewed by the Columbus Art Commission.
Okay. The distinction with GCAC is we're talking about starting a program that is actually has a budget that can commission new work, which the Columbus Art Commission is not able to do.
That's correct. And that's been one of the challenges over the many years, I would say. You know, I think Sayuro Lounge, the deer, you know, certainly a beloved art project, art commission, public art piece. You know, we only, it's not because the Columbus Art Commission has funding pot of its own. It was because there were resources at the time that we were able to commission that piece. So that's absolutely been one of the challenges.
One of the things that we also really hope to address, and we're seeing this more and more in communities across the country, is to use pooled funds that enable more equity in public art. So so that the dollars aren't necessarily tied to a specific location. And the deer are a good example of that. That's really nice. That wasn't, you know, I think there was some bridge infrastructure, but they were able to spread them out a little bit. And so it benefits the whole parkland downtown. But if you can pool funds, then you can bring art to neighborhoods that don't have any art right now, right? And you can also plan longer for specific, more iconic and large scale projects.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about GCAC's new public art strategy with Marijn van der Heijden, Executive Director of the Dublin Arts Council, and Jamie Goldstein, Chief Creative Officer for GCAC. Marijn, you also spent time as the Director of the Urban Art Space, which calls itself an art laboratory. What did that teach you about thinking outside of the box for art?
So much, you know, and the laboratory comes from being an extension of the university into the community. So very much this idea of a bridge space was really critical, you know, in thinking about that space. How can we be a space where people can collaborate, students can collaborate, but also community members can collaborate? How can we center artists and creativity in this collaboration? And then, you know, how do we carry out this work in a community? I think it's so important to create relationships, to build relationships, and to maintain those relationships, right? We're not just, you know, going in, doing a quick project and then leaving again. It was all about these kind of lasting relationships and building community together, especially with students too, as they leave the university. You know, they understand this work a lot better, and they can continue to do this work as they keep moving forward.
Jamie, tell me about GCAC's coverage area, because obviously you're the Greater Columbus Arts Council, so there's the word greater in there, Greater Columbus. So is having like Dublin and Hilliard and like all these other municipalities, are they a part of the strategy?
Absolutely. We fund in Franklin County. City dollars are restricted to within the city of Columbus, but a portion of them. But we fund artists all over Franklin County. And we really want to be, we may not necessarily, certainly right out of the gate, be able to fund public art projects in Bexley or Whitehall or Worthington or Dublin. I see a vision where that could be in the future. But really, many of these communities are also thinking about having a public art program or plan. And so we hope that these resources really give them the framework to move forward and identify their own funding stream, right? We're all going to be more successful if we can tap into multiple sources to create more public art throughout Franklin County.
Does Dublin have a public art plan?
We do. And it's been operational for quite some time, actually. My predecessor, David Guillon, was very instrumental in creating that and then getting the city to approve that plan. And we've been functioning with that plan for quite a few years now. We recently also established a public art board. We're, as an entity, almost 40 years into public art. So collection of over 60 pieces. And
yeah, and it is a percent for you get a they're the way you it it's not a percent of well you explain
it's
it.
Not a percent right
this is why it's complicated.
It's a hotel motel bed tax that we
in
receive.
Dublin okay
yeah from the city of Dublin a percentage of that
a percent okay
yeah
I'm learning a lot about percentages. Jamie, we only have a minute left. Tell me where people listening can learn more. They can read this 280-page document word for word
and all of the research that came before it. It's all there. GCAC.org/public-art, and it'll link you into the strategy and all sorts of templates and tools and all of our research. And we look forward to working with the community going forward and making more public art.
All right. And in 30 seconds, what's the biggest takeaway? What do you hope for, besides more money?
we have a strategy. We have a framework. We have a set of recommendations, and we're going to continue to move those things forward at whatever pace we can. The world is a little crazy right now, but we're gonna make this an actionable strategy where we continue to implement the recommendations as fast as we can.
The world may be crazy, but there's always room for art, right?
I love that. Ooh, that's a great tagline.
Oh, I should TM it. All right.
All
right. I want to say thank you to Marijn van der Heijden, Executive Director of the Elmas Arts Council. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you,
Amy. And thank you to Jamie Goldstein, Chief Creative Officer at the Greater Columbus Arts Council. Thanks for being here, Jamie.
Thanks for having me.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. I want to say thank you to our producers, Marcus Charleston, Aaron Esmont-Rabinowitz, and our student producers, Iza Huck, Colin Simpson, and Kiara Burson. And thank you to Iza Huck for producing today's show. And thank you to Board Operation from Chris Johnston and Cameron Howard. This is 89.7 NPR News.